Oh,
I was
that's
gonna
my
say.
little boy. That's my little boyfriend. He gonna be a heartbreaker. I listen with my nephew. Don't say shit like that around me. It ain't going down like that. No, he's not gonna be a little heartbreaker. No, he's not your little boyfriend. Oh,
Yeah.
he's so cute. I can't wait till he get older.
For me.
Get the hell away from my nephew. Because it goes
Backyard.
both ways. The
It does.
amount
It
of
does.
black men that I know that don't even call it rape. Because they're taught to glorify that an older woman wanted to have sex with them and they lost their
Oh
virginity
my
at an
gosh.
underage. Hola, everybody. This is Lucilania.
Hey, what's up? This is Steph coming at you live.
And this is Sex and Sensuality for the Churchy.
So we're going to get back into part two of It's Better to Marry Than to Burn. So if you're watching this right now and you didn't watch the previous episode, then go back and watch that so you're up to speed and where we are in this episode. And then come back and watch this episode. Let's jump right back in. Women in the church? And you covering it up? His response told me he wasn't expecting me to have known that. That he thought that they had sufficiently swept that under the rug. And I take that stance because he didn't even bother to try to negate what I said. What he actually said was something to the effect of, I hold him accountable to my measure of rule, and you nor no one else needs to know how I do that. I'm like, oh, so, I mean, I knew that that's what it was, not because anyone had told me, not because I gossip, but because I got eyes and I have discernment.
Wow. That's a whole...
And so, but it's one of those things, like, because that woman promptly left the church. She was also married.
The thing is,
I also know she went the first. I hope for their sake she's the last, but she definitely went the first.
Well,
they would want us to believe that, you know, they got it all under control.
Now, and again, the nature of sex is not something that is always comfortable. Like, this is not always like a dinner topic, right? Like, hey, honey, hey, kids, what did you do today? What was the sex topic for class today? Like, this is not that's not the case. But I've never seen it go well when people hide the experiences they've had sexually in a way that they use to bolster themselves and pretend as if they're above those experiences or those expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it all comes out, it's like, I can't believe that. But then all of us are like, well, how could you not believe it?
It's the squeezing of the tube. It's why one of the things as I was healing and dealing with my own internalized shame was like, oh, one, no one will ever get to tell my story for me or ever use it to try to shame me.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell my own story. As I've shared in previous seasons of the podcast, when it was the Radiant Sessions, where I talked about, yeah, I was with my ex and we were swinging. And at one point I was doing it willingly.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one's ever going to find that out through other means, because maybe he decided that he want to try to shame me. No. Mm-mm.
Well, it's the power you gain back in being able to no longer feel like, okay, this part of my story is so shameful, so impactful to me in a way that now makes you look at me lower than what I should be looked upon. And you know, I think the more we talk about, you know, sex and sensuality and so forth, it just makes me realize that it is the opportunity to actually really embrace a part of yourself that for how long we've been told to always like keep at bay, right? And then if you are someone who is, you know, considered overly sexualized or embraces their sexuality, then you're put into another bucket, mm-hmm. right? And at that point, that bucket's either, well, you know, whatever happens to her happens. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Or we actually take advantage of the fact that they're sexualized in that way and partake of it.
But never taking accountability for the fact that you're the one sexualizing me.
And that's always been a fear of mine when it comes to like little girls, you know, and I've always had a theory that you know, they always say that, you know, women mature are a lot more mature than men and so forth. And I think part of it is the adult reality that when you sexualize little girls, that is an adult reality that they have to embrace, understand, and know how to navigate.
Yeah, right. We're raised to be grown, but then at the same time, if we don't know how to navigate that properly, and we get a little too beside ourselves, then mm-hmm. it's also used against us. And so it's like you can't win for losing. And when you said that, what made me the who was me cringing on the inside and seeing how many daddies, black men, sexualize their daughters. Whether their intent is to do that, but it's just like, you know, or even sons. Oh, that's my little boyfriend. He gonna be a heartbreaker. Listen, with my nephew, don't say shit like that around me. It ain't going down like that. No, he's not gonna be a little heartbreaker. No, he's not your little boyfriend. Oh, yes. He's so cute. I can't wait till he get older. Get the hell away from my nephew. Because it goes both ways. The amount of black men that I know that don't even call it rape because they're taught to glorify that an older woman wanted to have sex with them and they lost their virginity at an underage to an older woman.
I can't even tell you the story that I...
And I'm just like... Mm-mm. Whether friend, family, like their mother's friends.
It's a badge.
It's
a badge.
And I get it. It's like on one hand, like this is how you've been taught to cope. But on the other hand, if you don't face the truth, then how as black men do you heal from that so you can actually have a healthier relationship with sex? Do you even realize the importance of having a healthy relationship with sex? Like I'm having a conversation with my trainer and we were talking about power and control and how with sex, like sexual assault, rape, all those things, molested, it's not about sex. It's about power and control mm-hmm. and exerting dominance. That's how the dark side, the very far end of patriarchy, because that's what men are taught. Not every man will sexually assault a woman or rape her or whatever. Or a man, or a boy, or a girl. Mm-hmm. But those that go to that extreme end, it's about power and control. Now another man comes in the room and he hears the conversation and he says, it's not about power and control. I just want what I want.
You just confirmed.
Thank you. I looked at him and he walked back out. And I was like, I looked at my trainer and he was like, he didn't. And I'm like, okay, I'm glad I know what just happened. I'm glad you know what just happened because then I'd be concerned about you.
That just tells you how deep the conditioning is when you are the and that's the thing that's always scary is the lack of self-awareness because being self-aware is not something you can teach someone to do or be or have, right?
Either, especially if they don't want it.
Denial just kicks it out the door and keeps it ever coming in. Because there's consequences to now becoming aware. And when you become more aware, you now have to be responsible and take, you know, responsibility for what you've done. And I think going back to what we were talking about earlier, there's a certain level of responsibility that is being attached to if I can't stop myself from having sex and to marry, that's the responsible thing to do. Mm-hmm. And yet there are so many other responsible things that need to happen even before you even get to that point. But again, it's still one-sided. It's still, I when I listen to that sculpture, all I can think of is a guy. I rarely ever think it, I rarely, and maybe it's just me, but I rarely ever see or picture a woman being in the forefront of that conversation. It's always the guy. Yeah, the guy who says it to himself.
Because a woman admitting that I really, really want to have sex, that she even has a sexual desire, His
Oh,
label
outside,
alone.
outside, yeah, especially outside of marriage, like, oh yeah,
Like, yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is like they carry that stigma into their marriage. It's not, it's like we direct it at young women, single women, but if you don't undo that, you don't get married and just be like, oh, it's okay. And if your and if you do and your husband hasn't, that he may not be able to accept, even though he likely might be unsatisfied, but
It's like
also
the
not being a not be able to accept you having your own sexual desire. I know someone who was like, they weren't married, but he was Christian, she was Christian, and she has a very healthy sex drive and likes to initiate having sex. And he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it when she was initiating sex. Matter of fact, he most of the times it wasn't even just about him having to be the one to initiate it. He wanted to feel like he was coercing her or almost
true.
or taking it from her.
Interesting.
And so it's like even dealing with, you know, we've been talking a lot about purity culture. The ways in which Christian boys are affected by the message of purity culture because a woman, a girl, is not supposed to want sex, but
No.
she is, she's supposed to be the gatekeeper. But boys are supposed to be the are the drivers, and they're entitled to a woman's body, and we're supposed to submit to them. And so then when you're in relationship with him, you're supposed to submit to him, but you're also conflicted because you're not supposed to be doing it, especially if you're not married.
And again, it still goes for me, it goes back to the responsibility of understanding what sex is and what sex is not, right? And I think there's more confusion about what people make sex out to be, right? Versus, the experience that you have with someone else, and then if you then you start adding all these details, right? And the details upon details upon details upon details, and I feel like the moment you remove the details, if you ever get back to like a very base level definition that we can all agree upon, I think we would be in a better place, but we never could get to that point, right? Because as long as I keep it in the holy realm, right, that marriage is this holy th this thing, and now if I'm having sex with you, that I've now disgraced the boundaries of marriage, then it'll never be this normal experience that people ex that get the chance to go through without the context of evil, hell, and any other biblical ramifications that make you feel less than otherwise for it. And 9 times out of 10, the guy is not the whore. Not in it's not, it's, oh, I can't believe he did
Listen,
that.
okay, so I got two stories. Two stories. First one, like, it's bringing up a lot. So I, you know, being the good Christian girl, I was part of several different Christian organizations in college. A couple of them were like chapters and they had a larger organization. One of them was like the overarching president over all of the organization, was married. Excuse me. He's a man, married to a woman. She was also part of the organization. And this is probably the first time that I ever really heard this whole it's better to marry than to burn, and I cringed. Now, him and I, like, at first, like, you know, didn't really know him, whatever, but as I grew older, he, you know, took a an interest in me and knew that I didn't grow up with a father. He had children that were a little bit younger than me, and you know, started taking on a fatherly figure role. And you know, I would go to him for advice about boys, car advice, you know, that kind of thing. We go to lunch every so often, not, you know, all the time. But and it was a welcome thing for me because yeah, I don't have a dad and this is cool. This is what I imagine dads do. Until one day.
that we're at a like meeting and it was summertime and I probably had shorts on or something. And he comes and sits next to me and his hand is on my thigh. And he says, "Oh, you shaved your legs. You need to be teaching these girls." But he's like caressing my leg while he's saying this. "You need to teach these girls how to be feminine like you." And in that moment, I ain't never had a daddy. I have uncles and grandfathers and men who would never touch my bare leg and caress it and tell me something like that. In that moment, it reminded me of a story that he would tell us about how him and his wife got married in college. And they got married real young because he wanted to have sex. And it was better to marry than to burn. And in those moments, it was like, again, better to marry than to burn or what? Because you got married because you want to have sex. And here you are, married to this woman for 20 plus years at this point with kids and sexually harassing, at the very least, a college age student. Actually, I think I might have been like right out of college. Either way, I'm a young adult. So marrying because you want to have sex did what for you? What did it fix? If anything, I imagine it exposes some very unhealthy relationship you have with sex. Mm-hmm. That maybe you do love your wife, maybe you don't. But it was also the thing, like, you keep saying this story of this is as if this is romantic. And I never want to marry a man that tells the story of how we got married. And he don't sit there and be like, "She's the love of my life." Who's literally saying that the only reason that you got married to this woman, not because you loved her, not because God said this is the woman that you're supposed to be with, you don't feel no destiny with her, simply because you wanted to fuck her. That is the least, one of the least romantic stories I have ever heard in my life. And so in that moment, I was like, I got a list of things that I want. And that is on the list of things I don't. Don't, a nigga better never, ever, ever say, "Oh yeah, I'm trying to fuck, but I want to fuck, you know, I don't want to sin. So let's get married." Because is it more sinful that he got married to have sex and is, because I imagine if I would have given you the green light, you'd have been like emotionally incestuous, because one minute you were calling me your daughter. And next minute, because I'm not your daughter, you're seeing me as a woman. And I could have been very vulnerable in that moment and saw him as some, and put my hand on his thigh.
Yeah, a lot of different things could have happened just in the vulnerability that becomes available, right? That becomes available because you allowed him to be seen and occupy a space that you thought safe, and it is now exploited for his gain. Because there's nothing about thinking about, well, if I do this, if I say this, how does this impact her? Do I add on to some of the issues that she goes through in life and has to wrestle with? Mm-hmm. Because at that point, but you also bring up the point that why people do a lot of the things they do are never really fully investigated, right? And if we are honest with ourselves and we take the time to say, you know what, I did a lot of stuff in my day, but why? Why was I so driven to make decisions, make choices that are contradictory to
what I say I believe?
And the only thing that keeps me in some ways an okay place is the fact that I have this secret place that I can go to, and it is the place that keeps all of what I consider to be parts of myself that I'm afraid to share, even though in very healthy ways these are the same parts of ourselves that can actually help to build, solidify, heighten passion and all sorts of things sexually, right? Like, it's not that these things are inherently bad, because they're not, because there are examples of how power, control, consent, they all can play a part in building a certain type of sex life. But when you have to hide from it and say to yourself, you know what? I can't let people know that I really feel this way sexually. So I'm just going to pretend that I'm just, this just not me. Right. So now what does that do to your partner? Because, you know, I always like to think about the other side of it is how does your partner now have to respond to you? And what's the impact to them knowing that? And again, this is not saying that every sexual experience or every sexual nook and cranny that you enjoy has to be put out there. That's not the case. What is the case is the honesty for yourself about what you enjoy and what you don't enjoy. And knowing that, you know what, I hate to say it this way, but him coming onto you at that moment was not, had already happened
It's knowing at this big age now that all that, my daughter stuff and he was grooming me.
Mm-hmm.
Because although I was of legal age, the power dynamic as it was,
mm-hmm.
It's funny, he was absolutely grooming me. He was taking advantage of the fact that, here's this girl who doesn't have a daddy. So I'm going to use that to try to groom her. And then you thought that you had your way in.
And this is going to be my way to get her to lower her bar.
Again, because purity culture teaches us that we're supposed to be the gatekeeper. So, and I honestly am not attracted to him, didn't want him in that way or not. But I also didn't tell anybody until very many, many years later, because also as the gatekeeper, it must be my fault that he did it. Someone would have undoubtedly said, well, how short were your shorts?
Oh, of course.
Why did you let him touch you? Why would you go to lunch with a married man? Why would you confide in him? Why would you talk to him about that stuff? He's not your dad.
It sounds like those times when a rape victim becomes questioned about all the things that makes her the rape victim. And it makes her then begin to question whether or not what happened to her or him was their fault, right? Like what part did you play in allowing this to happen? And if you played a part in any way, shape, or form, then guess what? You're an accomplice to what happened to you, and you no longer can feel the trauma, the hurt, the pain, or whatever it is against this person because you provoked it.
And see, okay, because I did say I had two stories, right? And you didn't even know what the second story was, but you introed it perfectly.
Our
frat brother, Jonathan McReynolds, did a concert a few years back before the pandemic at the church that I was attending at the time. And I love Jonathan McReynolds. It was packed house. And I wore like a pants jumpsuit situation, but it had like a keyhole opening in the back. Now, typically outside of church, I wouldn't wear a bra, but I'm in church. And so I wore a bra, but didn't have like a bra that was backless. And I'm like, whatever. So I wore a bra that you could see the strap through the keyhole. And concert was amazing. We're having a good time. And there's this older white woman that will go to the church. And she comes up to me after the concert and like grabs my bra strap. And says, this is so inappropriate. If a man would have done that, you would have been mad and it would have been your fault because he shouldn't be tempted by seeing your bra strap. I turned to this woman. I said, you are the reason why women are assaulted and they don't say anything. Because if a man would have done that, like you did, because I turned when she grabbed it, I turned around like, what the hell are you doing? Why are you touching me? And you're trying to justify it by saying, well, if it was a man, you would have a problem with it, but it'd be your fault. No. No, he gets to keep his hands to himself. And it would not be my fault that he can see my bra strap. That you are literally saying that men have not even that they even have no self-control, but they don't even have to have it.
No, we don't. Nope. It could be.
They can see my bra strap and touch it and be completely and utterly blameless.
Absolved of any kind of blame.
I'm like, don't ever touch me again. Don't ever talk to me like that again. And quite frankly, if I ever even see or hear about you going up to another woman, young or old, with that kind of bullshit, best believe you're going to see my face. Because there are enough, like most rapes go unreported for that bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first thing they're going to do is, why were you there? What were you wearing? Did you say no? Why would he assume? And so she's like, well, would you go tell Bishop that? Let's go right now. You think I'm scared? You think I'm scared to tell him the same thing I told you? Because I'll be damned. If we do go and he would have reiterated what you just said, I probably wouldn't have been at that church much longer. All that this stuff that happened this past year would have happened 4 years ago. Because you're not going to tell me, even if I wasn't, and it wasn't a survivor of rape, but at that point, I had been raped several times by three or four different men at that point, that in any way, shape, or form, it was my fault. Because purity culture is on that little golden path to rape culture.
Yeah, because
these types of verses, that's basically, like you said, it's generally not told to women. It is not understood that women are burning with lust and they should get married. This is a verse that are told to men. Even though mm-hmm. he says widows and unmarried. So obviously he's saying like widow, not widowers,
mm-hmm.
because I'm sure widowers were getting remarried, but widows were expected to stay unmarried.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy how you have to take this all into consideration when trying to explain to people the impact of scripture like this and or ideas that they seem innocent on the surface, but they're very damaging and can really cause someone to spiral in a way that nobody knows about or no understands because they feel like they have to hide. And that's mm-hmm. and that's the part that I, if nothing else, learning to be yourself on any given day can be a challenge within itself. And to now add on to that, the shame behind experiences, sexuality, identity, and not feeling enough because someone else doesn't even understand you or you don't fit within their box of whatever that means for you. That's the part where we hope people can feel empowered and say, you know what, listen, my sexual journey is my sexual journey. mm-hmm. And what I believe and how I believe things, that's up to me. And what decisions I've decided to make as a result of it is up to me. But I would not be bullied by other people's, in many ways, archaic ideology to make me feel otherwise, because that also is a form of power and control.
Mm-hmm.
When I can tell you to be a certain way and you submit to that, and now I know that, okay, you know what? I can basically get this person to do whatever I want and I can impact their lives
mm-hmm.
in a way that I never thought I could, but I know I can.
Yeah. And when you like, when you do the work of undoing the shame, choosing what your actual values are, even mm-hmm. if it is something that was given to you, maybe you decide to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
But you get to decide what you get to keep and what you get to throw away. What is harmful? And what isn't. And not just harmful to you, but harmful to others. Because you might think and believe, or maybe it actually hasn't harmed you. But if it's harmful to others, the greatest commandment theology says we love God and we love others as we love ourselves. So that means I got to love myself well in order to love others. And I mm-hmm. can't love God unless I love others.
It's all circular.
So it can't just be, because then that's where privilege comes in. The intersection of privilege is like, oh, yeah, I'm not harmed in this. I'm like, yeah, but those that are marginalized more than you are. And so it's not good enough just to stop there. Like, you got to start there, but you can't just stop there. And mm-hmm. then you can't really just stop at choosing a new ethic.
Yeah.
You got to, at some point, to some level or another, everyone isn't necessarily going to have, I mean, God, like, people, we need more podcasts that are better quality, but everyone isn't going to have a public platform. But mm-hmm. at some point in your life, you also can't be silent. You got to speak up to challenge these ideals, to challenge this type of patriarchal religious bullshit. You got to.
Yeah,
you gotta live that ethic in order to actually challenge it, because then you're a hypocrite just like the rest of them. But we gotta speak up.
Well, at that point, you can actually own what has been given to you, and you do make it your own, right? You know, the hope is that whatever values, you know, that I instill in my son, that it will be an example for him to then say, you know what, my dad used to say do this, my dad used to say do that, and he used to do this himself, but I now understand why, right? And I actually understand it enough that I can now make it my own, so it no longer just becomes, well, my dad told me to do it, so I just did it.
But see, and that's the thing, and that is intimacy. To be seen and known, and to know and see. But if I don't know myself, if I'm not intimate with myself, then how can I actually invite someone else in to be intimate with me and to allow them to see me and to know me?
That's gonna be
and podcast. Vice versa.
That's going to be the next podcast episode.
You know, and so it's like, yeah, the physical sexual intimacy of sex. But the beauty of that with emotional and spiritual, and there's intimacy with friends and intimacy with family. And it's like, there's so many different kinds of intimacy, different ways to be intimate that is not sexual. But for those relationships that are sexual, not all of them are going to be intimate in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
I do not, that whole idea of sexual immorality, when you really dig into culturally what those original words meant, it was about not selling yourself and not cheating on your spouse. It wasn't just blanket sex outside of marriage. It's don't prostitute yourself and stay faithful to your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that sex outside of marriage, if I'm not doing those two things,
you
may
good.
Not have come with emotional and spiritual intimacy. It might, even if you're married.
It might, but it doesn't always have to.
But if I'm in covenant with you, if I've entered a marital covenant, I pray. And I think a lot of people don't, because we're scared to be seen and known. We're scared to be rejected for what that other person will see if they know us, because we reject ourselves because of shit like this. Because our desire is demonized. And a lot of times when you do that, it breeds dishonesty. And that dishonesty comes from shame. But the desire was never the problem. The dishonesty is. But the desire wasn't the problem.
It's the fear.
But it's the fear of being rejected for something that our desire, our sexuality is a core component to our identity. And so if I own that, then one, and I give my self permission to seek that out in ethical ways, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm with someone and I do love them, and maybe, but and I broach that, then what does it mean if they don't want it? What does it mean if they reject me, they don't want this relationship anymore, they can't vibe with it? What does it mean if they do? Because sometimes we start to get on the fact that they might, you know, it's almost, it feels childish, like the sneaking around, the, you know, the unforbidden thing.
Mm-hmm.
That you want it more when you don't, when you can't have it.
When you can, it's like, what do I do now that I do have it?
Without going into detail, think just as a thought as we close, just considering how many women, mostly women, but I'm sure men, it happens to men too. But how many of us, because I did it, have a man cheat, or maybe he hasn't cheated yet, and you agree to an open relationship thinking, well, if we got all our cards on the table and we say, all right, this is what I agree to, this is what I don't, excuse me, and
you know, you think that that means that as long as we communicate and we abide, you know, we stay within these boundaries, we're good. How many of us have had that experience and they still cheat? That they literally have the green light to have sex with other people and that still isn't good enough. That you still catch them lying and running behind you and sneaking around when he didn't even have to do that. That all he had to do was like, hey, whatever it was that y'all agreed on.
I'm gonna let you drop the mic on that one because that definitely is some deep.
And, yeah. Well, and you know, but again, based on this scripture, if you get married and that fixes everything, bullshit.
It doesn't
mean you're not gonna burn. If you're burning with lust and you don't have mastery over your desire, then you still gonna struggle. If anything, what a lot of married people tell me is it gets fucking worse.
Marriage is not the container that will help keep everything intact. And I think in some ways it becomes the band-aid, a really, really big band-aid, and not realizing that there are still people involved, your partner involved, that now still has to deal with almost the nonsense of you not willing, your unwillingness to just be honest with yourself, to do some deep introspection, to really understand the root of who you are and why you do what you do, and to come to terms with the fact that this is really who I am. And again, I'm not going to underplay, like, I'm not going to make it seem like it's an easy thing to do, because it's not. We go in our entire lives still figuring out who we are, even till the end. So this is not something that just happens overnight, but or in a vacuum, but there's work involved. And without the work, you can't skip it. This is not like, you know, I can go to the gym and pretend I did some push-ups and some sit-ups and drink some shakes and like, okay, I'm good. Like, and the sad thing is, even if you could somehow make other people believe that you're in shape, that you're doing these things that are keeping you healthy when you're really not doing those things, the truth is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone deserves the opportunity to live in their truth, to live in who they are as free as they can be, because there's only one life to live it. So.
And that's my final comment. That's just the people that you might have a band-aid, because I think there are a whole lot of marriages where the marriage is really salt on an open wound.
Mm. You must have, that ends that episode.
And that's how we will go. I think the next time we record, because you're going to be here.
I think so. Yes.
Maybe. You're going to get an episode. We're going to be in the same place together.
Same place. That energy.
And then after the next couple few episodes, we haven't decided. We're probably going to take a break to plan out the next part of the season or new season. I don't know. Whatever we want to call it.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. So hope that, you know, this taught you something or sparked some thoughts and desire to dig in, to research, to ask yourself some questions, to have some discussion with your partner, your friend, your spouse, your pastor, whatever, whoever, all of them. This is what we're here for. You know, we just want to, we're shining a light on topics that have been stigmatized in religious, Christian, church, Black community to openly discuss these things, to openly challenge and critique these things that we have heard and we have just taken as law because someone who was an authority over us said it, so it must be true. Must be true. And with that, I will leave you the way that I always leave you. Be as radiant as the sun. Adios. And good night.
Bye-bye.